overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
And welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living. And for those of you who are in virtual land, I invite you to enter into the sacred moment with me. And we have a lovely group of people that have gathered at the center, all wearing masks, all safe distancing. And there's something beautiful about coming together as a community in the Sangha, in the pack, if you will, because we need each other. We need to know that we're held, that we're seen, that we're heard, and that we matter. And so it's as meaningful for you all to be out there in the audience as it is for me to be sharing this with all of you in virtual world, as we experience this oneness of being. Here at the Center for Spiritual Living, our vision is to awaken all of humanity to its true nature, to its spiritual magnificence, you might say, to realize that we are not separate, egoic selves, even though that is what we appear to be. In truth, we are one life, the life of spirit. You could say God's life. And as we open to this nature of our divinity, we realize that everything is divine in its true nature. In the beginning, it says in the Bible, the very first words, darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light. And the word that was used for light was Shekinah, which is the light within. So in the beginning, there was this light that was within all creation, and it awoke. And so I invite you to be that moment of creation. In the Upanishads, there is the Vedic hymn of creation. And when I heard that Vedic hymn of creation from Vivekananda, it's as if I remembered that moment in my soul when that light within awoke. So I invite your soul, your eternal soul, to imagine the light of your own being awakening in this holy instant. Because when time collapses and time is an illusion, then we realize that all that ever really does exist is this spark, is this light. And we are always at the beginning. And there is a lot of darkness on the face of the earth right now. So could the voice of the Creator within all of us say, let there be light, and we invite, as the creation, the light within us to shine this Sunday morning. All one light. And then you realize in that metaphor of light that all the great teachings have used it. When Jesus said, don't put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. When in the Quran they would say, light upon light, nur ala nur. The light in me reflects the light in you. And then we experience ourselves not as the finite self that Emerson says wails and suffers, but as this infinite presence within, that lies stretched in smile and repose, and by its very nature, it illuminates the darkness. And so we experience ourselves as something different than who we thought we might have identified as. Yes, we're men. Yes, we're women. Yes, we're humans. Yes, we're whatever gender and nationality and race identification. But we're so much more than that. And the invitation is to experience that something more with every breath we take. This Sunday, I'm speaking of grace. I love the idea of grace. It is defined as the unmerited givingness of the universe to all of its creation. And when I say unmerited, I mean you don't have to earn it. You don't have to be good to manifest and experience grace in your life. And grace comes in the simplest of things. It could be the smile of a friend. It could be the embrace of a loved one. It could be that phone call that calls you in that time when your heart was broken and you just needed to be heard. All magnificent moments of grace. There but for the grace of God, we say so many times. Maybe we took that one turn and it completely changed our lives. We said yes to an invitation that ended up being an invitation. I was invited to come to a center in Atlanta to hear a person speak. It completely changed my life. And now I do what I do here in Huntsville, Alabama, because I said yes to that moment. We invite those that are walking in the door to enter quietly when they're ready, knowing that Spirit is always on time. So I would invite you to notice this beautiful peace that is here right now. Throughout this month, I have been anchoring myself on a simple phrase that was given by Paul in the letter to the Philippians. And it's rare that I will quote Paul, but I found the profoundness of his comment to be extremely helpful. He said, when there is chaos all around us and we don't know what to do, he said, the first thing is to not worry. Because Paul understood that if we worry about something, we're investing our faith in a limited idea. And so to let go of worry is in a way to open the doorway to faith and to trust. The second thing Paul said is, in your asking, do it with a grateful heart. I ask people who want to attend the center to wear a mask because I'm grateful we have them and that we are smart and that we are thoughtful and we respect each other and we're going to be safe. So it's with gratitude for a community that understands that, that I ask that we respect one another by doing the safe thing and the right thing at this time on the planet. I am so grateful that we live in a democracy. I'm so proud to be an American. So I would ask with gratitude that you exercise that right and vote this week or on November 3rd. November 3rd is also the anniversary of my little dog's passing 2 years ago. And I'm so grateful to know the truth about death, that who she is never died, even though her form is no longer with me. And so I take great comfort in that awareness, because when there is death, and there is quite a bit on the planet right now, my sister-in-law just made her transition, I can feel their presence that's still here, even though the form isn't here. So my heart is filled with gratitude for the blessings that are at hand. And the last thing Paul said, and this to me is probably the most profound, he says, notice that there is a peace. He calls it a peace that passeth all understanding. We don't have to understand how a peace could be there right in the midst of a pandemic, but it is. How a peace could be there right in the midst of chaos, but it is. And Paul said, identify that peace within yourself. And he says, let it guard your heart and let it guard your mind. And so with these three helpful little hints that Paul offered to us, a gift only means something to the receiver when you say yes to the gift. So I invite you to receive that gift from Paul and take it into your heart. And if it feels appropriate for you, to utilize it as you navigate during these troubled times. I hear that beautiful song, like a bridge over troubled waters, I will lay me down. So we are having troubled times in our country today, in our world today. Could we find that bridge to our heart and just rest in that peace, rest in that gratitude, and rest in a faith and a trust that although worry may arise, and it will, that trust and that faith are so deep that we could let them guard our hearts and guard our minds. I invite you to put your hand over your heart and to feel that operating center right there within you, where love abides. And this month of October, the theme for the month is to polish the mirror of the heart so that the heart might see clearly. Sometimes the head sees things in a confused sort of way, from a belief system, from an opinion, from a judgment. And that's all fine and good, because that's what the nature of the mind oftentimes is. But when the mind can be open and the heart can also be open, and you can put the mind and the heart together in a kind of strange, the Buddhists call it bodhicitta, the heart mind. And the heart sees oneness oftentimes, whereas the head sees two. So I invite you to place these two together and feel into that perception of wholeness that Ernest Holmes says is all healing. So the invitation is to perceive the wholeness right there within yourself first. Perceive the wholeness in your relationships. Perceive the wholeness in your country. Perceive the wholeness in the world. And know that as you operate at this perception, you're literally calling it forth, because consciousness is causative. So this Sunday morning, we let go of the struggle and we enter into the ease and grace of this sacred moment. When you're ready to play with me in the realm of I don't know, but let's find out together, open your eyes. Let me see your beautiful smile under your masks. I can see it in your eyes. My beloved Jake said to me, he's working now again, and he's working in retail, I believe, and he has to wear a mask. And he said, David, the strangest thing, he said, I feel more intimate with people with masks on than I did when they weren't wearing masks. What do you suppose that is? And I said, well, what do you think it is, Jake? And he says, well, I'm looking into their eyes. And oftentimes when they weren't wearing masks, I wouldn't even notice their eyes. But now I'm literally looking into the windows to their soul, and I'm making that soul connection. You know, when you go back to work and you're wearing your mask, you'll be looking into their eyes. The eyes speak volumes. Have you ever noticed that? You know, I have the four-leggeds at home. They're my kids. And I went downstairs this morning and Bert was in his bed. It was dark. Oh, by the way, move your clocks back. It's going to be really dark next week because we're going to be moving it back another hour. Or would that be, make it lighter? Well, it makes it lighter, doesn't it? I don't know how it works. But anyway, it was dark downstairs in the dining room, and Bert was in his bed, and all I could see, because he's a white dog with brown spots, and all I could see were his two eyes looking up at me. Oh, well, there you are, Daddy. And I looked into his eyes, and he looked into mine. And I said, now, you can go back to sleep, Bert. It's still dark. I'm just going to work on my talk. And he went, oh, okay. And he went back to sleep. Yeah, so he doesn't have to wear a mask for me to look into the eyes of his soul. Polishing the Mirror of the Heart. This is the book that inspired this series, and it's a book by Ram Dass. And I took the titles for the monthly or the weekly talks out of some of the chapters of the book. One of the chapters was called The Road Home, and how each of us custom designs our road home to the truth of our nature. And you know yours has been a zigzag path, as Emerson said. It's not usually a straight shot. I joined the Baptist church and I came out of... No, usually you go this way and then this way, and maybe you try this and this doesn't work. But ultimately you find something that resonates with your heart. I remember as a young student of truth years ago, and I'm 71 years old, so one of my first was, I think, Shirley MacLaine. And she wrote a book, Out on the Limb, and I thought, it's okay to think differently than other people. She would talk about concepts of reincarnation and people who would channel spirit, and everybody said, this is so horrible. But yet, it felt like it was something where I could hear a different dimension being expressed. When I went to college, and I had rejected religion by that stage because it was rather primitive in its way of believing about things, you know, if you take religion literally, like fairy tales literally, you're doomed. You know, I remember my beloved Terry over there, she quit the Baptist church, I think when she was 12, when she said to her parents, I cannot worship a God who will kill everybody in a flood and then give us a rainbow. And I said, you must be my daughter, because I said the same thing. You know, so could we get a different idea of spirituality, a different idea of God? And of course, this beautiful man, Ram Dass, was a professor at Harvard. His name was Richard Albert, and he was a sociologist and a psychologist. And he awoke to his divinity through a chemical called LSD. This was during the 60s. And it was very big. You would take this drug and you had altered states of consciousness. And those altered states of consciousness are where you're tapping into this universal presence. But the irony that Ram Dass finally learned by going to India was you didn't need the LSD to go there. And so he started studying with a beautiful man named Maharaji over in India. And he experienced the transmission of the guru to the disciple. And you know, G-U-R-U, G-U-R-U is how you spell guru. And you can take that literally, G-U-R-U. It's you. And so Ram Dass learned that the guru takes you to the Sadguru within. And so Ram Dass's whole life has been about expressing from this Sadguru within, go within. And so when he talked about the road home, he said, it's important that this road home reveals itself to each one of us. And when it does, like this little sign from Thich Nhat Hanh says, you will say, I have arrived, I am home. This place called home, which is a spaciousness of our true nature, it awakens when it's ready to awaken. And so home awakens, the awake awareness awakens, and it happens when it's going to happen. It's like a light bulb going off. But then the second phase, and all spiritual paths are like that, you have to wake within. You have to do the work on yourself in order to really cleanse the lens of your perception, because we're still seeing it with distorted eyes, with judgment, with confusion, with identity, with attachment, with projection. So that's that working within. And then the last phase in working without on the road home is where you begin to realize I'm everyone and everything. We have a lovely lady in the center who rescues caterpillars and raises them to be butterflies. She's now volunteered her service at the botanical garden. Hopefully she'll be in the butterfly garden, but don't tell them what they're doing wrong, Jean, because they don't have the knack that you might have with the butterflies. So what if in this waking up and waking in and waking out, we experience a bigger sense of connection to the all that is? Huh. So that was the first week. And then the second week, Ram Dass wrote a chapter called Breathing In and Breathing Out. Now, I love it when truth gets really simple. You want to polish the mirror of your heart, learn how to breathe. Just breathe. When people come up to me and they're going through some emotional turmoil at the end, we don't do the receiving line anymore where I get to hug you, but they would come into that receiving line and I could tell they were holding onto this something that was really upsetting them, and they would be shaking, and I would just say, exhale. And then they would go, ah, now breathe. And now exhale. Ah. There's something about just aligning with our breath that helps us navigate whatever it is that we're experiencing. A lovely lady in the center here, her dog made her transition on Thursday, and she was doing that same, holding her breath, grieving really deeply. And I reminded her that she's still here with her. And I blessed her by saying, may your little dog haunt you like my little dog is haunting me. Because I said, I read a book called Soul Contracts. When you have a soul contract, and in that book by Soul Contracts, they say every animal that you encounter in this lifetime, be it domestic or one of your wild ones that you encounter, like the butterflies, has a soul contract with you. And even in death, they're still with you. Now, I know it sounds abstract. It sounds a little Shirley MacLaine, but you know, I choose to think that they're still here. Gigi's saying, no, it's true. They're still here with us. So as she was going through her grief process, I just reminded her that her soul is still here with you. And yes, it's painful to let go right now, but if you can breathe, you can get through anything. So that's a simple little profound way to be in life. The breath holds all the keys. You know, breath is the word for spirit. Huh. And if you think about it, not too much, Terry, but if you just think about it, when you were born, when you took your first breath, spirit entered into this body. And when you leave this form, the last thing will be an exhalation. Now, what doesn't come and go? Spirit. What doesn't come and go? The breath. The breath is always here. It's the breath of life. So what if we are all, the only thing that's impermanent is this form. And then, oh my God, life gets really kind of fun. The third week, last week, I talked about being with what is. Being with what is. So many times we struggle with doing. You know, I quoted Meister Eckhart, who says, people come to me often and they say, what should I do? What should I think? What actions should I take? And he says, but very few people come and ask me the simple question, who should I be? So could we learn to be with life as it is right now? To be the peace, to be the openness, to be the love. When this world is so, to be the peace that is so necessary right now, when everybody seems to be spiraling out in chaos. Lisa Ferraro, my dear friend and colleague, She's starting a new ministry called Soul Call Ministries, and she asked if I would mentor her. And so she's very ambitious, as young ministers often are, and she has a whole bunch of us working on her support team. She calls it her support team. And I remember so many of them have so many gifts and skills. And this one very intelligent lady from New England said, "Lisa, I'm here to give you all the content and all the important information that you need to do your ministry." And she looked at me and she said, "How about you, David?" And I said, "I'm not here to give you any content. I'm here to give you a context. The context is that spacious place from which to express. And if you know the content will fall in line as content always does." So Lisa, I think at first went, "Huh?" And then she went, "Ah." First, find that space. You know, when we learn to do spiritual mind treatment, the very first step is to recognize there is that which is always there. That which doesn't think thoughts, and yet thoughts will arise within it. So could we go to that ocean of awareness, that ocean of love, and then let the thoughts and the emotions and the insights arise from within that? So now we go to the Way of Grace, which is one of the last chapters in this lovely book. And Ram Dass shares in his own frustrated but yet emancipated, liberated way. He said, "When I met the Sadhguru Maharaji, he said, I felt that I was living the most graced life of all because I felt I had his wisdom, his depth. And in a holy instant, I could fall back and start talking to Maharaji within myself. He was still there. He was always there. And then the dastardly thing happened. I had a stroke." And he thought, "How can my life be lived in the grace of the guru when now I can't walk, I can't talk? You know, it's like my life had become a veritable hell," he said, until he awoke within the stroke. This is for you, Adam. He awoke within the stroke, and this is how he put it. "As I struggled in my mind to accept the stroke, a message came from a dear friend that I had known in India. My friend K.K. Shah in India felt that I should be reminded of the power of faith, and K.K. wrote some simple words that Maharaji had said to him about me. Maharaji said, I will do something for him." Huh. "Just that remembrance was enough to recall my faith. My soul was once again enveloped in Maharaji's blanket of love." There is a film out, and he's referencing it. It was done about 20 years ago, and it was called Fierce Grace. And the director of this film about me and about the stroke called Fierce Grace. And in the film, I talk about trying to see the stroke as the grace of the guru. And somewhere within that documentary, Fierce Grace, he says, "My guru stroked me." In other words, he knew that there was grace in this. When I lost everything, then what didn't I lose? I know Marie can feel the grace going through her cancer experience. I feel the grace of having had a heart attack and surviving. Adam had a major bleed. That's what Ram Dass had. He had one of the major bleeds in his brain. They didn't know if he would live. And he came back as you did. So he says this, "I finally realized that the stroke was the natural result of my own karma. It wasn't being punished by the guru. And Maharaji's grace now lay in helping me deal with the effects of that stroke. I went to see Ram Dass in Austin, Texas, maybe a year and a half after the stroke, and I had been one of his students for years, and he was this vibrant, active, witty, clever, dynamic speaker. He just could enchant you with his wit and his stories. And now what I saw in Austin was they wheeled a man out in a wheelchair who was kind of slumped over like this, and for the first 20 minutes, just sat there in silence. And then he finally said, 'Will you surf the silence with me?' And we sat there, and I saw my own mind expecting and wanting something different than what he was showing me. And then he said, 'You know, the stroke took away that part of my brain that cloaks the ideas with words. I can see an image, but the part of my brain that had the word for it, like umbrella, I can see something that protects you from rain, but I can't remember the word that does that.'" And so he was sharing his own process and how vulnerable he'd become and how he had to learn to receive. And as he was sharing from his vulnerable place, you could see the grace of the stroke in his own demonstration, how it humbled him And in humbling him, he got to surrender. He says, now I have to receive everything. I have to be helped to get up. I have to be helped to dress. I have to be helped to drive. He said, I used to be driving a little Maserati and loved my sports cars. Now I have to be driven around. And he says, and I'm learning to receive. He says, when it was that I became like a baby, I had to learn to receive like a baby. This is grace speaking. Maharaji's grace lay in helping me deal with the effects of my stroke. It is true that being able to deal with the suffering from the stroke totally changed my life. There's going to be suffering in everyone's life. There is suffering right now on the planet. Could we learn how to embrace that suffering, not as the doer, the controller, the manager, but literally through grace, literally through surrender? Huh. And then grace will come in the strangest sort of ways. I was looking in my office for some great inspiration on grace this morning to close with, and I found my book, The Tao of Pooh. And I pulled that book out and I started reading The Wisdom of Pooh, and I thought, that's the kind of grace I need to end on.
Because, you know, he has that kind of brain that I need. You know, it makes me laugh, it makes me realize that maybe life's a pretty thing. You know, when you've got Pooh in your corner, what more do you need?
Hey, so I certainly wouldn't wish a stroke, he says, on anyone. Don't get me wrong, but mine has had a positive impact. Although I lost my faith for a while, over time it's been tempered and deepened. Could we trust that life? You know, it's so funny. Because of this COVID thing, you hear these anecdotal stories. And there was a story of a woman who had a heart attack. And because the hospitals are so overcrowded with coronavirus and ventilators are taking up, it took over 2 hours before she could get taken care of. And I think, had I not gone to that hospital, that emergency room, in the moment that I was having that massive heart attack, I wouldn't be here. So it was grace that I managed to get there. And of course, when I got to the emergency room at 6:30 in the morning, Trey said, should we walk the dogs first? They haven't done their business, and then you could go and check it out. I said, you know, actually, I think I need to go in now. You walk the dogs. So when they're wheeling me down on the gurney, they said, where's your partner? I said, he's walking the dogs. And then they all laughed, but thank God I didn't walk the dogs that day. So he says, I was overwhelmed by the suffering. Eventually, I found a place in myself that has faith that this stroke is part of my awakening. And that's when grace started to court me. Huh. It wasn't a bad thing that he had this. Lastly, he says, once you start to awaken spiritually, you perceive your own suffering and start to work with it as a vehicle for further awakening. Anybody out there have a little suffering in your life? How beautiful. Could that be the doorway to your surrendering to grace? You know, I've shared with you that probably the most transformational moments in my life were those moments where I thought everything was going to hell in a handbasket. When my first relationship ended, when I graduated from college, I was bereft because I thought this individual was the source of my love. But the grace of that was I finally found that the love was inside me, not in the other person. So it took the end of a relationship for me to awaken to that love within. So what if it works in paradox? You know, you lose the job in order to realize that job wasn't defining you, that there was the work of your soul that needed to happen. But it meant that you had to let go of this identity with a job like my own. I was saying, this job is killing me, and when I end up in the New York City hospital, my soul said, now are you going to leave this job? Does it take me nearly killing you for you to leave this job? So could we get those wake-up calls in a gentler sort of way? He says, when you suffer, the suffering seems to envelop your whole world. And all you can see, it's me and my suffering. Oh, woe is me. He says, think of a framed picture of a cloud. And if the cloud is cropped too closely, you can only see the grayness of your cloud. But if the picture is cropped to a wider angle, you see the blue sky that's all around this gray cloud. And then you realize it's not my pain. It's not my suffering. It's just the suffering on the planet. And then there's a lightening of the load. It's a lightening of the load, Terry. You don't have to carry all the burdens of the world on your shoulders. And he says that is grace, when it's no longer about me. And then, strangely enough, when we meet our own suffering, and suffering, you know, if you understand Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths is that all life is suffering. And we suffer when we attach, when we project, when we worry, when we want things to be the way we want them instead of the way they are. We're going to suffer. We suffer when we cling to an identity. Seamus has a 21-year anniversary of a whole life shift. When I met him, he was in a very dysfunctional marriage, and now when he closed the door on that, he opened the doorway first to the mystery of who he was, and now he's created a whole new existence. What if it takes a certain amount of suffering, and suffering is grace-filled, because if it wouldn't have been that painful, he might never have left that situation. So sometimes the pain has to be great enough for us to step out of something that we oftentimes cling to. So that's Ram Dass speaking of grace in that beautiful sort of way. This week, Pam Hurdy sent me a text from a new book that she had just started reading. And the text was all about this thing called about grace. And I thought, how could she possibly know that I'm speaking of grace? So I went to Amazon and I ordered the book, and the book showed up last night. And so I thought, I wonder if I can find that little thing that she sent me about grace. And I opened it to the very page that it said. And I thought, should I share this? And I thought, it was grace that it came in that text. It was grace that it came last night. And so here's what Mark Nepo says about grace from the very first page of the book. And the book is entitled, Unlearning Our Way Back to God. We learned the wrong stuff, Terry, when we were in those Baptist churches. So we have to unlearn our way back to God. And here's what he talks. He talks about it from a perspective of grace. It's beautifully written. Each person is born with an unencumbered spot that's free of expectation, that's free of regret, that's free of ambition, and it's free of embarrassment. It's free of fear and worry. It's an umbilical spot of grace. I like that. He uses the umbilical. It's tethering us to this spot of grace that we all share. Huh. This is the way of grace, where we were each first touched by God. Your little girl knows that. You know that when you see her. You can see it in children so beautifully. It is this spot of grace that issues peace in our lives. So as I read that little sentence, can you just touch that peace from that spot of grace within yourself? It's not complicated. It's inculcated within our very beingness. So he says, psychologists call this spot of grace the psyche. Theologians call this spot of grace the soul. Jung calls it the seat of the unconscious. Hindu masters call it the Atman. Buddhists call it Dharma. Rilke calls it inwardness. The Sufis call it Galb, which means the heart of the beloved. And Jesus calls it the center of love itself, the kingdom of heaven within you. So he says, to know this spot of inwardness that we're calling the spot of grace is to know who we are. Not by surface markers of identity, not by where we work. Seamus and I were talking about this. Not by where we work or what we wear or how we like to be addressed, but by feeling our place in relation to the infinite and then by inhabiting that relationship. The universe is calling. Could we know ourselves as existence itself? Wow, as eternity unfolding. You know, as a spark of divinity flowering. You know, it's fun to play with it. This is a hard lifelong task. For the nature of becoming is a constant filming over of where we begin. When we born perfect as a nobody, we go into somebody training, and then we've got layer after layer after layer of my somebodyness. Jake was telling me earlier, he's peeling those layers away one layer at a time. In the Sufi teaching, they say there are 70,000 veils that keep us from knowing ourselves. They say it's very important that you lift the veils one at a time, and then they say, make sure you don't tear the veil. Ooh, lovely metaphor, isn't it? So I am remembering who I am by lifting up these veils of forgetfulness. So then the Sufis would say, it's all about remembering who you are. And there's a little chant we sing at Circle of Love. I am remembering who I am. And who I am is this divinity in a skin-encapsulated ego, and the skin-encapsulated ego isn't going to be here for that much longer. This is a hard lifelong task, for the nature of becoming is a constant filming over of where we begin, while the nature of being is a constant erosion of what is not essential. Could we be willing to let go of the stuff that no longer serves us? You know, our opinions, our judgments, our story, our limited ideas, our problems. They also say in Sufism, if you want to give something to God, give God the one thing God doesn't have. And you know the one thing God doesn't have is your problem. So would you be willing to give your problem to this divine presence that we all inhabit? We each live in the midst of this ongoing tension, growing tarnished or covered over, only to be worn back to that incorruptible spot of grace at our core. Life is wearing us down. It's taking away the stuff that no longer matters so that we might return to the grace of our being, to that little spot of grace. Lastly, he says, regardless of subject matter, this is the only thing worth teaching. I love when they say the only thing. Find that spot of grace, Jake. Just find it, you know? how to uncover that original center and how to live there once it's restored, to live from grace. You know one thing grace does? It doesn't struggle. It doesn't effort. When you're living in grace, you're living in ease and grace because you're not the doer. Grace is doing everything. Could thy grace be sufficient for me? Can we say that to life? And then just show up for life. His very last little paragraph, and this is how it ripples out. In essence, our connectedness to the universe, to God, in being who we are by inhabiting this original spot of grace, releases a spiritual gravity that draws the spirit out of others. All I have to do on Sunday morning is to find that spot of grace in me, and it draws out that spot of grace in you. It's like a tuning fork. I'm tuning to my grace spot, and then you get to tuning into your grace spot because it's only one grace spot. That's how he says it works. He says, it releases a spiritual gravity that draws the spirit out of others, not by conscious persuasion or authoritative intent. It's not because I'm demanding, now get into your grace spot. No, it's by the sheer warmth and the fullness of being who you are. Huh. Emerson says, what you are speaks so loudly, I don't hear a thing you're saying. Could we look at the character behind the mask and see what's shining forth? Is integrity shining through those eyes? Is creativity shining? Is compassion? Is empathy? We're teaching a class on healers on healing, finding the golden thread of oneness in everything. And basically, all these enlightened teachers talk about the necessity of being empathic, of being compassionate. First, it has to start with our own self, because this is where we experience the suffering, usually, is in our mental, emotional bodies. But then could we have compassion for the suffering of other? You know, this lovely lady who called me, who was grieving the loss of her dog, she and I weren't separate in those holy conversations. And I could say, I sit with you, you know, I know exactly what it feels like. I'm coming up on the anniversary of when Baby Speck made her transition. And, you know, it's funny, those moments, they're kind of seared in your memory. The last moment that I said goodbye to her, the last moment that I lay on her bed and gave her three kisses of love. You know, you remember, you know, those final moments, and they're really sacred. So could we be gentle with ourselves as we navigate and try to find the grace in our lives, however challenged that might be? I want to give you Winnie the Pooh because he brought so much joy to my life. And I'm going to try to, and then I'll launch into a closing sorts. Let me give you a little bit of history on the Tao of Pooh. You see the little Winnie the Pooh guy there? When I was a brand new minister in 1989, a young man had been arrested for the murder in a drug deal. He was 17 years old. His mother was on the board of the center, and I was here. And she asked if I would go and see him in prison. He was in, what do they call it, where they isolate them in the top floor and nobody can see them. The only one that could get in was a minister. And it was a drug thing gone wrong, and he was up there. And she asked if there was something spiritual that I could bring him, and I brought him the Tao of Pooh. You would have thought I brought him the greatest elixir from the universe, because there's something about reading a children's story that can be very helpful about Winnie the Pooh and Christopher Robin and those characters that lived in Pooh Corner. And so I pulled out my Pooh this morning. This is probably the one that I went up to the prison with. And here's a little taste of Pooh, because this is grace. So Pooh's in the forest. So say, Pooh, why aren't you busy? Christopher Robin says. Pooh says, because it's a nice day, said Winnie the Pooh. And Christopher Robin says, yes, but... And then Pooh says, well, why ruin it? And then he says, but you could be doing something important, Pooh, said Christopher. He says, I am, said Pooh. And he says, oh, what are you doing? And he says, listening. And he says, listening to what? Well, I'm listening to the birds and the squirrels over there. And what are they saying to you? He said, well, they're saying it's a nice day out there. Well, but you know that already, he said. Well, yeah, I do, but it's always good to hear somebody else think so, too, he replied. And then he goes on to say in the Tao of Pooh, and Tao means the way. You know, if we're talking about the way of grace, we could talk about the Tao of grace. So Pooh is the master teacher of the Tao of grace. He says, what could we call that moment before we begin to eat honey? Pooh is contemplating. Some would call it anticipation, but we think it's much more than that. We would call it awareness, says Pooh. It's when we become happy and we realize that we're happy, if only for a holy instant. And by enjoying the process, says Pooh, we can stretch that awareness out so that it's no longer only for a moment, but it can cover my whole life. That moment when we get ready to taste the honey. Maybe when you come to the center on Sunday mornings, you feel like you're going to drink some honey. So you have that anticipation. I'm going to be fed by the nectar of love. He says, we can have a lot of fun just like Pooh did. And then this is the last little thing. And then he thought that being with Christopher Robin was a very good thing to do. This is Pooh thinking. And having Piglet near him was a very friendly thing to have. And so, when he had thought it all out, he said, what I like best in the whole world is me and Piglet. He didn't have good grammar, but that's okay. What I like best in the whole world is me and Piglet going to see you, Christopher Robin, and you saying to me, what about a little something? And then me saying to you, well, I shouldn't mind a little something, should you, Piglet? And it being a hummy sort of a day outside and the birds singing. He's just finding grace and just being together. He looks a little like Christopher Robin over there, that little munchkin. And he says, the clouds above us join and separate. The breeze in the courtyard leaves and returns. Life is like that. So why not just relax, says Pooh. Who can stop us from celebrating the beauty of each moment? So Pooh would find the grace in the littlest of things. This is a good one to read your little girl, because the grace is always there. The beauty is always there, and it's waiting for us to tap into it. I got a prayer at the end of John O'Donohue's, who blesses my life. And book is called Bless the Spaces Between Us. And if we could call forth the grace in every moment, because it's there waiting for us. Remember, it's the unmerited givingness of the universe to itself. In our revealing service this morning, people were sharing how grace entered their lives. This one woman had a machine that brought the red waves into her to help her with grace. Another young man was experiencing kundalini, and he found the grace how to manage that kundalini. Another young man was experiencing the identification of who am I, realizing that there's so much more than who he thought he was. Another young lady is stepping into a whole new expression of life and finding that doors close and doors opening, but we're all safe, it's only change. So could we call forth the grace and the ease? And this is John O'Donohue's prayer near the end of this little book on blessing the spaces between us. And it's a little prayer for equilibrium. Equilibrium basically says to the universe, it's not good or bad. It just is. And could I find that even in those tough times, those transformative times, those heartbreaking times, that I can surrender into something that will hold me up, you know, to maybe the birds singing? They say the birds don't sing because they have a message. The birds sing because they have a song. So when I get out of my identification with me and my problem, could I surrender into the grace of the bird's song and let it feed my soul? It's just kind of a playful little way to invite the Tao of grace. So here's his little sacred shift. He says, like the joy of the sea coming home to the shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. Like the joy of the sea coming home to the shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. I love to laugh. Raoul always has a good joke for me, and he always makes me put life into perspective. And as the wind loves to call things to dance, may your gravity be lightened by grace. I look out the windows now, and my beautiful trees are turning bright gold and red. And we have a sumac that's turning brilliant red, and Trey's sister was Susan. So now the sumac has all of a sudden become Susan the sumac, and Hermione, the beautiful golden sugar maple. Now I've got red leaves and gold leaves just cascading down in my garden, and I feel it's through the wind blowing, it's lightening me through grace. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. Don't you love to look up at the full moon? When Etika made her transition, it was 2 years ago yesterday, she made her transition on the harvest moon. And as Lisa walked out of that hospital room, she looked up to the harvest moon and she saw an orb by the moon. And then they wrote a song called Etika's Moon about how she's just showing us that she's still there. So like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. When the thoughts arise, it could be gentle thoughts, life-affirming thoughts, thoughts of reverence. And he says, and as the water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. You know, in the Tao, the Tao Te Ching, they talk about how water will fill whatever form you give it. So could we be that space in which life can fill us so free that we may be about who we become and allow this new life, Shannon, allow it to unfold the way it wants to become? We're all kind of stepping out in a new way with this COVID thing. You know, we don't know what the new normal is going to be. Will we ever get past a place where there are masks? I don't think for a long while. Will we be able to hug and shake hands? I think we're going to be bumping elbows for a fair amount of time. Are we going to be able to go out in mass crowds and sing and dance and express? In my world, not without a mask. And so could we allow that to unfold in our experience through grace? As silence smiles on the other side of what is said, may your sense of irony bring perspective. You know, could we have a sense of humor? Sometimes things have to get worse before they get better. The paradox of living life. Sometimes things have to fall apart. I think our country's kind of fallen apart a little bit, so it can come back together better. Build better something or other. I think this is the Biden. Could we come and build a better healthcare plan for all of us? So that even people like me with pre-existing conditions don't have to worry about losing their healthcare. You know, could we surprise ourselves, a sense of irony, bring perspective? And as time remains free of all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all that it names. Huh. As time remains free of all that it frames. In other words, time is an illusion. Don't get caught up in yesterday's idea of what this was or that was or how we should be in this country. Letting go of that, then we could invite something that wants to emerge, and may your mind stay clear of all its names, all of its labeling. You know, Goethe says, when you label someone, when you label something, you limit it. But if you see the potential, I think the potential for our country to be a better democracy than it's ever been, you're calling forth that better democracy. You're calling forth our better angels. You're calling forth compassion for all our children. Those little children at the border, they're our children, you know? Could we let that make us better human beings? That's what he's saying. And may your prayer of listening, a prayer of listening deeply, deepen enough so that you hear the depths and the laughter of God. Oh, I have to do that one last time. And he says, and may your prayer of listening, listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I was reading Emma Curtis Hopkins this morning, and she was talking about how practitioners need to listen to the Orphic voice that comes from within, to listen to God's voice, and then upraise us, upraise us, she says, from this place within. He's saying the same thing. May your prayer of listening deepen enough to hear the depths of the laughter of God. Wow, let's do that right now. Listen deeply to hear the laughter of God. And I hear the laughter of God when I hear the rain falling from the sky. I hear the laughter of God when I hear the birds having their little discussion and their call and respond back and forth. I hear the laughter of God. I hear the laughter of God when I go and walk around Big Springs Park and the ducks are they're having their little conversations. And I'm wondering, what are they doing? What are they saying? It's usually a mother with a little gaggle of goslings following her, quacking away, and I'm hearing the laughter of God. When I see a child playing, yesterday it was kind of a chilly day, and the neighborhood boys, I think they're in the first grade, there were four of them, with their shirts off running through a sprinkler. I thought, isn't that a little cold? But they were laughing and playing and having the greatest of times, and I thought, this is the laughter of God. And so as we listen deeply, not to the nattering nabobs of negativity that might be operating in the mind, we turn off that station of thought and we can hear something that's always there. The voice of the universe, the song of the universe. That's why they call it the universe, the one song. But it does require that we get still enough so that we can hear it. And as we listen to this heart song, to this voice of God, we feel into what it's really saying to us. The voice of God within me reminds me that all is well. that even though the appearance of discord and chaos is all around me, that at the heart of hearts, there is peace. And so I hearken back to Paul, to not worry, to be grateful in my asking, and to let this peace guard my heart and guard my mind. And that is the voice of God within me, saying, lo, I am with you always. I will never leave you or forsake you. And so as I use radical reliance upon this presence, I no longer have to identify as the doer, as someone separate that has to go around fixing problems and making the world a better place. But I can actually surrender into the grace of this holy instant and just consciously breathe in and breathe out and say yes. Yes to this amazing life that we've all been given. Yes to the challenges which are now turning into opportunities for me to navigate in a new way. Yes to the perceived obstacle, which is now the launching pad for a greater way to live my life. Yes to the endings, and yes to the beginnings, knowing that everything is a new beginning. Yes to the beginner's mind that doesn't have answers, so that I might unlearn myself back to God. Yes to the no mind that is filled with possibility yet to be discovered through lowly listening and through the willingness to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And so the grace is endless, and it's always flowing into us and out from us with every breath that we take. So I invite you to let your breath be conscious. How simple that is. I did a little game for myself yesterday. I like to do acronyms. And I did an acronym for grace. And I had fun with it. And I basically said, the good, the God, the glowing is ever giving of itself in this holy instant. That's the letter G. And so I'm here to remember and to recognize and to respond and resonate as that spark of grace. A is then I can allow and accept and attune and attend and stay alive as that grace has its way with every breath I take. As C, I stay conscious and curious and creative and celebrate every holy instant of this amazing life. Finally, to end up as eternity itself, as existence, empathically and everywhere expressing eloquently with equanimity. Boy, that's a complicated, grace-filled acronym, but I invite you to play with it yourself, knowing that she's always there. The good is revealing herself. I am remembering it now. I allow its unfoldment. I celebrate it with every breath that I take, and I experience eternity in each holy instant. This is grace on the move. It's on the move in you and me. And so I invite you now to put your hands over your heart and let's affirm the heart salutation together. I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
You are my deepest aspect of myself.
The grace in me bows to the grace in you.
The grace in me bows to the grace in you.
In this place we are one.
In this
place, we are. So let grace open her eyes, let her open her hands, let her open her heart, and let her shine, shine, shine. You're going to put your clocks back next week, 1 hour, and you're going to go out and vote, and you're going to shine, shine, shine. Stay safe. I love you. Be good.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.theSundaycelebration.org. www.cslhuntsville.org.